Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth, with the sole purpose of advancing and enhancing the lives of women. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Living by Design show. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we are excited about being in our favorite place on Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern, here with you, our listeners. So, as always, we want to give our first thanks to everyone for joining us this evening in the chat room and the dial-ins and everyone that's going to be listening to the archives. We welcome you. And we think you're going to be very excited and very interested in tonight's show topic. So stay tuned because I'm really excited and anxious to get into this topic. We have a great guest with us this afternoon, Dr. Debbie Glazier. And she's a nationally recognized authority on parenting and child development. Dr. Glazier has been featured on many national broadcast shows and magazines, and some of them are, I'm sure you've heard of, Red Book, USA Today, CNN, and she even had a segment on Fox News. So we're really excited about that. But first I want to ask how you've been doing this week, Tony. Have you had a good week?
Yeah, it's been a busy week, recuperating from quite a few activities that we had here in Indianapolis in regards to a celebration that we call the Indiana Black Expo, which is a week and a half of activities, and my broadcast company is involved with it quite a bit. So that means my duties have to be extended to a lot of things. And but it turned out to be a good week. It turned out just trying to recuperate from the events over the past week and a half, this past weekend.
Oh, yeah, because I know that that's usually a pretty busy time in the city, and everybody's kind of running crazy, especially you.
Right.
Okay, well, I'd like to do something a little different here. Now, on our Living by Design show, we very rarely promote other shows, and it's not that we don't appreciate and support other shows here on Blog Talk Radio, because there are a lot of fabulous shows. It's just because our show is so new, so we just haven't yet had an opportunity to do that. I know I have talked some about peas in their pods quite a bit, because I strongly support the fact that they are involved in saving our children, and that is an alarming epidemic in our country, so I definitely support that. But right now, I just want to, if you'll bear with me, I want to take a little bit of time to talk about someone here on Blog Talk Radio that actually has a show, and in a few minutes I'm going to ask him to post in the chat room his show's website, but this gentleman has had a significant impact on my life this week, and I say that because I have been going through some serious personal challenges this week, and it has really, it's challenged me. It's challenged my faith, it's challenged my spirituality, but I was able to make it through. And he wrote a book entitled, I See That You're Down, When Are You Going to Get Up? And the gentleman that wrote this book, his name is Sean McDowell. And I encourage everyone to run out as quick as you possibly can and buy this book. It is amazing. It is absolutely amazing. And I see Sean is in the chat room. And, Sean, I'm going to ask you, are you in the chat room, Sean? It looks like you got bumped out and maybe you came back in. If you're in the chat room, if you could please post up where they can buy the book. I'm pretty sure you can buy it on Amazon.com and Sean's website is seanmcdowell.com. It's spelled S-H-A-W-N. McDowell is M-C-D-O-W-E-L-L.com. So if you could post your website, that would really be good. And I just really encourage you guys to get that book because it helped me a great deal. And it's an autobiography, actually. It's an autobiography of his life and some of the things that he went through in his life. And I think you would find it very, very helpful with some of the things that you may be going through. So it's very well written. He did a superb job putting the information together, and I just think it's fabulous. So if you could put your website up, Sean, I would appreciate that. And with that said, a few people are saying they can't hear in the chat room, so I'm going to ask you all, well, they can't hear me. Moving on, I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of the upcoming shows over the next couple of weeks. And ladies, if you're ready, then Howard Hewitt is ready. And he's excited about coming next week. So I want to make sure that the sound is working and that everybody can hear me because this is a very, very, very important announcement. I know this is something that everybody has been waiting for. Howard Hewitt is coming, and he's ready to be here. I spoke to him earlier, and he's excited about interacting with you all. So I am going to take a quick station break here and give you all a taste of what's going to be coming next week.
Coming up on the Living by Design show, a special tribute to you, our loyal listener, an evening, an intimate evening, with R&B legend, Mr. Howard Hewitt.
I remember the first time I danced with you, baby. It was a slow song. We're so low, girl. I wanna sit you down and let you know just how I feel. It's been a long time since I felt so strong, and much too long since love's been here.
It's time to say goodbye for now. We'll have our second time around. But before we go, there's something I'd like to say.
Amen.
Howard Hewitt, coming to Living by Design.
Ladies, get ready because we're going to make that a night to remember. And like I said, Howard is very excited about coming. He's very excited about being here next week. He knows what he's in store for because I told him so. Have your questions ready. Have your dial-in questions ready. If you want him to sing or talk or whatever you want him to do, answer questions, he's prepared. The following week, we will have New York Times bestselling author J.L. King, who busted on the scene on the Oprah Winfrey Show with his blockbuster book entitled On the Down Low. J.L.'s going to be on our show to discuss his take on why HIV cases are on the rise among African-American females. So he will be here 6 o'clock Eastern on that the following week after the Howard Hewitt Show. That will be August the 6th. So we look forward to that discussion because I think that's going to be a very powerful discussion, and we're going to get a lot of great information from that. So, again, for today's topic, if you have a comment or a question, please use the dial-in number, which is 646-478-3060. And feel free to call in and talk to our expert. It's going to be coming up here soon to discuss the topic of blended step families. So we're going to go ahead and bring Debbie on the line and get our conversation underway. Hello, Debbie. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How about you?
Terrific. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all, Debbie. And Tony is our co-host. He's on with us as well.
Hello.
Hi there, Debbie. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good.
Now, Debbie, I'm just going to ask you to go ahead and give a little bit about your background and just, you know, tell our listeners some of the things you've worked on.
Sure thing. And actually, I have to say it was a lovely introduction you gave me. And, yes, you know, I do have my PhD in child psychology, and I've been interviewed and have had many wonderful, you know, sort of media opportunities to help get the word out about parenting and child development and, in this particular case, about remarriage and blended families. But I have to say the credential that I'm really the most proud of is that I'm a parent. And not only am I a parent, but I live in a step family. And truthfully, more than any, you know, book anybody can read in school, you know, the best learning typically occurs in life when you're living it. And I've learned so many wonderful lessons from my own family. And I really do understand, not just from a, you know, perspective of being a psychologist, but really more importantly, the perspective of being a mom, some of the joys and certainly the challenges of living in a blended family.
Exactly. Absolutely. And there are some challenges. I definitely understand that. I have known many family members and very close friends who have endured that. And, you know, of course, it always turns out some good situations, some bad situations. And we're
right.
going to try to address some of those so that people won't get so much heartburn
yes.
from those types of situations. So let's start off by first asking you, Debbie, just explain what is a blended family when you talk
okay.
about a blended family. Just
right.
explain a little about that.
It is a funny term. It's used a lot. People will see it a lot in magazine articles and books and things like that. And it's a term that I'm somewhat uncomfortable with, although people understand it very quickly. They'll think, oh, that means a step family. But the word blended might imply that it's sort of this collection of people mushing together and maybe leaving behind who they were before, whether it was the family they had before, the interests they had before, and kind of creating this, quote, new family. But in reality, I like to see blended families, if we use that term, as groups of people coming together who still have very important histories, who have many memories that deserve to be honored and cherished, who have many interests that they can continue to do on their own. They don't have to do everything together. So they're not blending to the point of losing their identities, but they are coming together and learning about new people and hopefully learning a little about themselves to create another family experience for them and a new family experience for them. So it definitely refers to people coming together from previous situations, whether it was a single parent who's now getting married or as a result of divorce or that type of thing.
Now, Debbie, I'd like to ask, when you talk about that situation,
mm-hmm.
and I love the way that you talked about bringing things from past experiences, because when we think of a blended family or families coming together with those past experiences,
mm-hmm.
there needs to be some recognition of those experiences. And do you find that that seems to be a problem in some instances, because there's an expectation that now that we're together, the
yes.
things that you went through, you need to let go and start new things with us?
Yes, and it's understandable that adults feel that way to some extent. One, it can be very uncomfortable to constantly be, you know, reminded of, you know, oh, well, this is the way we used to celebrate Christmas, or this is the way we used to have, you know, family dinners, or that type of thing. But there could also be a protective quality on the part of the adult saying, boy, that might be painful to remind my stepchild or my child about those old experiences, you know, and they kind of want to cover it up. In other words, the reasons can be very loving, you know, or they can be based on kind of their own, you know, insecurities, whatever it may be. It's common and it's understandable, but what I encourage parents to do over time and in a way that they're comfortable with is certainly recognize that the past does create who we are and doesn't, you know, shouldn't be ignored, and really there are many ways to successfully combine traditions and experiences from the past and create new ones. You don't have to live in the past, but it can really backfire to sort of pretend it didn't exist.
Yeah, and I would like to ask you, I have encountered several situations, and I really want my listeners to understand how to deal with this, and I'm going to bring a very good friend of mine on the line here shortly because he has successfully been able to master this. But a lot of people, and I hate to pick on females, but a lot of times it females are the ones that have to go through these unfortunate situations. But when you enter into a relationship and someone has a child already, if a female
right.
enters into a relationship and the gentleman already has a child,
mm-hmm.
The woman always tends to get either jealous or envious or resentful or
mm-hmm.
whatever the case may be, a lot of negative emotions.
Mm-hmm.
How can they deal with those negative emotions? What do they need to be thinking about, or
mm-hmm.
how can they position themselves so that the focus won't be on them, but the focus, because the focus always needs to be on the child? What are some
right.
of the things they can do?
Well, you said it beautifully and perfectly, which is the focus really needs to be on the child. And I think it's really important for parents to put themselves in the shoes of the children who are entering into this new situation. You know, it's one thing for an adult to cope with change. That's challenging enough, let's face it, as adults to cope with change, new, you know, experiences, new rules, new sometimes living arrangements, you know, and all those other things. Imagine that, multiply it by, you know, an infinite number when you put these experiences on a child who didn't ask for it, may not see the value of it, may even feel worried that they caused their parents' divorce in some way, you know, way back when, all kinds of strong emotions. And to understand that children seek stability, children seek, you know, care and attention from their parents.
Absolutely.
And so if, let's say, in the situation you shared where a man comes into a relationship who already has a child and that child is particularly eager to spend time with his or her father, to be able to put yourself in the shoes of that child and say, goodness, that's so understandable, and how lucky for this child that he or she has a parent who's so in tune with their needs, instead of saying, well, what about me? And really, parents, you know, are the adults, and we're the ones who, if our needs aren't getting met, our emotional needs or our needs for attention, we need to work on that ourselves, whether it's through therapy, through talking privately to our partner and saying, I'm so glad you're a committed father, and that's one of the reasons I fell in love with you, and could we please make some time for us, too, so that we have some time to nurture our relationship.
Now, what if it just happens to be that, and I'm just quoting here because this is not my feeling, but what if it happens to be the child from hell?
Well, again, listen, I know children can be challenging, and the truth is children can go through challenging periods even in non-step families, okay? I mean, I just had a whole conversation with a dear friend of mine who's not in a step family, whose teenager is driving them crazy. So, you know, it's not, step families don't have the lock on challenging moments. And so it's, again, really important to first take a step back and say, boy, is my stepchild trying to tell us something? Is he struggling with an issue? Is it too much too soon? Is there something we're missing? You know, take a step back first and look at the behavior and what might be behind it. And then the second thing is seek help, seek support. Make a commitment to helping your family thrive and grow. Don't, you know, getting into conflict after conflict isn't going to help anyone. And thankfully, there is support available in every community to help families, you know, become more strong and more connected.
Right. Yeah,
that was going to be my question, because is it important for you to sit down before you make that step? Is it important to sit down as a group and say, okay, these are our expectations, and get everyone's feelings, even the child's feelings?
Well, are you asking should the child weigh in on whether adults should remarry, or are you asking should the child weigh in on sort of the new rules and some of the new things that happen in a step family?
Well, I think from a child's standpoint, listening to the child's feelings, is that something that the biological parent should really pay attention to and be aware of, or should they do it as a unit going into the step family?
Well, I'll say a few things. First of all, I read a quote, a statistic that absolutely blew me away, and I think you'll be surprised by it as well, that said that fewer than 25% of couples sought relationship or educational support to discuss their upcoming remarriage, and less than half even read a book or magazine article about step-parenting or remarriage. So in terms of preparation on the adult's part, before they even get to the point of sitting down with their kids, if, you know, only half of adults are even learning about step-family life before they enter into it, that can, you know, just add to a stress level and add to challenges. So I strongly encourage first the adults to really sit down and think about what can you do and be very proactive. What can you do in advance to make the transition to a step family a smooth one? Because you don't want to be putting out fires. You want to be preventing them. So thinking about things like who's going to be disciplining, how will we be disciplining, and this is just between the adults now. This is not a decision to be made by the children. You know, where will we be living? How will we be dividing the finances? Because finances are a lot more complicated in step-family relationships because you've got other adults, you know, in the picture and other children in the picture. Then you've got all the emotional preparation to prepare for. Again, this is now just the adults sitting down, hopefully with each other and possibly with a, counselor of some sort to just acknowledge and think in advance about the psychological and emotional issues. Like, we're going to be dealing with kids who have very strong feelings. How can we meet their needs? How can we help them cope with change? How will we address the different loyalties that kids might feel conflicted about and all that? So before you ever sit down with the children, it's so critically important to really think through this big step before you take it. And you can't predict every scenario, of course, but really work on getting on the same page on the big issue so that you can feel with your partner that you're prepared for the ups and downs. And there are many, many joys. I mean, of course, this is a self, you know, help kind of radio program, so it's very easy to focus on the challenges, and the challenges are very real, but there are some wonderful joys as well, which we can talk about later if you'd like. But in answer to your question, once you become a step family, communication is key. And yes, I strongly encourage parents to communicate and include their kids on some of the decisions, the ones that are appropriate to include kids on. And that goes for parents in every family. You know, there are just some things that are age appropriate to include kids on and some that aren't. And every parent knows their child best and their children's ages and stages. But I strongly encourage a family meeting, particularly with step families, maybe once a week, where you can all sit down together and kind of know that this is happening maybe every, I don't know, Sunday evening at 8:30 or something, and really include everybody in and say, hi, everyone, just want to talk about what's been going well this week, and also want to talk about what might be kind of tough, you know, anything you're having challenges with, we're here to work it out, and that can be an opportunity. So if one of the kids says, you know, I don't think it's fair that, you know, I have to do more chores than my stepsister here, you know, how can we talk about that? And then parents can really brainstorm. And the point is to let your kids know you're here for them, that dialogue is ongoing, and this is not just something that happens at the beginning. Communication is key for any successful family throughout their life.
And I just wanted to kind of touch on something that you mentioned earlier, just to elaborate a little bit more on it. You mentioned the remarriage situation, and do you have any statistics? Because I know the last time that I did a search on stats for second and third marriages, which is typically when the blended family situation comes into play, what are the stats on failed marriages? Because the last time I looked, first marriages usually ended in divorce, maybe 60%, and second and third marriages were like 68 and maybe 70% of the time ended in divorce. And that's probably because they can't get the families on the same page and getting along.
Right. That's one of the reasons. Yeah, there are all kinds of statistics. I mean, I guess first what's important to know for those listeners who are living in step family situations, that they're not alone. That in fact, among children, about one-third of children will live in a step family before the age of 18, and about 50% of all of us of any age will live, you know, will have a step parent at some point in our lives. So it's very, very common. These are very common issues. You're definitely not alone. But yes, as I guess it's 50 or 60% of marriages may end in divorce, and about 75% of people who are divorced will eventually remarry. So that's a pretty high number that lead to step families. But then those marriages...
At least they try again.
Pardon me? Yes, they do. Absolutely. That there's optimism and hope, and absolutely. Sadly, many of those do end in divorce, and I don't have different statistics than you do. But there are other reasons, too, not just the challenges of, you know, navigating the children and helping them adjust, but certainly that's probably one of the most commonly address challenges among step families is the issue of, you know, how do we help the kids? How do we make this work? And really that's why my co-author and I wrote this book, is to give kids a voice in all of this, to give kids the tools to express themselves and express their feelings and let their folks know, you know, this is how I feel and I'm looking for some support.
Now, if you don't mind, Debbie, I'm going to just try to go to the phone here. I've got several people waiting in queue, so I'm going to see if I have any questions. They may just be listening, or I may have some questions here. Caller, you're on the line. Looks like area code 111. You may have a blocked number. Can you hear me? Okay. Hello, caller, you're on the line. Can you hear me? Okay. Caller, are you on the
line? Caller, are you on the line?
Some folks may be listening.
Oh, okay.
Thing and not want to make a comment.
Yeah,
so
I muted the mic back. I just wanted to be sure. A lot of times, you're right. Sometimes they're just for listening purposes. So that's fine. No problem. Just wanted to make sure that we weren't missing any questions. Okay. So moving on. Tony, did you have a question you were going to ask?
Well, I know, and we want to get to the positive here, but there's so many questions when you talk about step families and blended families, the discipline aspect of it, because I've seen so much and read so much, and had so many conversations about the discipline. I've been told that a step parent cannot be the disciplinarian, come in and try to become a disciplinarian because there's a relationship that's already been built, and that's on the road for disaster. Is that true, or is it a conversation of expectation of what's going to happen? How should that be handled? Because I've seen that happen where someone comes in, particularly in a man's situation. A man will come into a marriage, a second or third marriage, and particularly if they're younger children or even teenagers, and they're trying to put their discipline on these children who are brand new to their lives. And the children are very reluctant and don't want to cooperate at all. And so how should that be handled?
Right. It's a really tricky situation, and it requires the adults in the children's lives to be incredibly sensitive and mature. And I can't emphasize enough how important it is for the adults to know that they're sort of the lead horse in all this. You know, they're setting the pace in their homes. And it's really important to work together and be very proactive. That said, yes, if you think about it logically, discipline, if you think about your own situation growing up, in your own family, if you were not in a step family, you know, discipline comes as a result of getting to know people, getting to know their backgrounds, having shared experiences, like you said, having a context or a relationship. It can be incredibly awkward and really downright conflictual to have somebody whom a child hardly knows come in and say, this is what you need to do and you need to listen to me. There's no relationship yet. So the most important thing that a new step-parent can do is work on building a relationship. And that takes time. It just doesn't happen overnight. And there's so many interesting dynamics going on in the step-family that most people don't really think about. For example, even something as simple as reading people's cues and knowing what your other family members can sort of tolerate. A perfect example is I've heard families say, in our family, we used to joke about everything, but now my mom's new husband doesn't have that same sense of humor, and he thinks we're being obnoxious. You know, and so even just the way you communicate is so different. So add that layer of discipline, which typically happens around kind of heated situations, and very often it can lead to disaster. Now, that said, it doesn't mean that if a new step-parent sees something going on that they don't approve of, that they shouldn't address it. They just have to really think through what the most appropriate way to address it is. They might choose to observe it and then talk privately with their partner later and say, you know, I love, you know, your kids, and I want to be a positive influence in their lives. I was very concerned today because I noticed X, Y, and Z, and here's how I would handle it. What are your feelings about it? And have that talk privately. You know, if it's something that can't wait, if it's a situation certainly that's dangerous, or, you know, the child's health or welfare is in the way, then of course, as a caring adult, you step in, even if it means the child says, you know, you're not my parent, you're still the adult, and if you see something that you're concerned about, you need to step in. But in terms of day-to-day kind of discipline, it's something really that most step-parents will agree they do best easing in. And a lot, though, depends on the child's age. I mean, if you're entering a situation where a child is very, very young, that timetable is going to be very different than if you're becoming a step-parent to a 13-year-old, for example.
Right.
Yeah. And let's kind of talk a little bit about from the child's perspective, you know, whether it's a small child or a, you know, preteen or a teenager. Talk a little bit about how are they feeling. I mean, what are some of the typical emotional traumas and stuff that they have to go through, because I know it's really difficult for them to have to be subjected to someone that's not their biological parent.
Right,
they have to
get
used to a new person. So what are some of the things they feel and that they're going through, so that our listeners can understand that we as adults should be setting the standard. So children are going through their thing too.
Yes, I'm sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, and being sensitive to the fact that our children are dealing with strong emotions, but they don't necessarily have the maturity yet or the life experience to know what to do with them. You know, again, adults who experience strong emotions can pick up the phone and call, a friend or can make an appointment with a counselor. Children might just be feeling incredibly overwhelmed or confused. So we really do need to read their cues. We need to be sensitive, and we need to be available. We have to spend day-to-day time with our kids so that as things come up, we can, you know, be aware of them. In terms of the feelings that stepkids feel, of course it depends, and it varies from family to family. I mean, certainly we interviewed kids for our book who were happy about their stepfamily situation, who shared that their lives were kind of chaotic before, and they've had this wonderful stepparent or a terrific new step-sibling in their lives, and they're feeling quite, you know, hopeful about their new situation. But what's interesting is these same exact kids in these same, you know, best-case scenario situations also admitted that at times they feel sad. They feel sad about the life that they used to have or that feeling that they used to have when their biological parents were together. They might feel angry. They might feel caught in the middle, if parents are still kind of bickering. They might be afraid. They might have feelings of fear, wondering, how will my life change? I mean, remember, we're talking about children who developmentally are still somewhat self-centered. And I don't mean that in a negative way, you know, like they're bratty. I mean, they're supposed to be self-centered. They're supposed to think about what's in it for me because they're kids. They're not able, you know, to put themselves in the shoes of other people as much as adults can, for example. So it's normal and typical for them to say, how's my life going to change? Am I going to have to go to a new school? Am I going to have all these new rules? So my point is that any given stepchild can experience all of these emotions, sometimes at the same time, you know, happiness, fear, sadness, even anger. So what's important for parents to be aware of is to be looking for these, to know that any of these can be normal, but to also know that if you have questions or concerns about your child's feelings or about how your child is coping with all the changes, it's really critically important to seek additional support.
Now, Debbie, one thing I want to bring up, because there's been a couple of scenarios that have been similar to one another. They are parents who are thinking about themselves specifically.
Mm-hmm.
They have children, but mm-hmm. they've been lonely for so long.
Sure.
They want to do this or they want to do that. So they've made a decision, I'm going to do this for me.
Right.
And in that aspect, the children get left kind of left out, and then they'll get in the relationship and they'll say, you know what, I've been disciplining this child for the longest. Now I need someone to help me. And they relinquish that discipline over to the step parent because they're basically tired. How do you handle a situation like that?
Well, again, this is a classic example of adults needing to get information before they enter the situation, so their expectations are realistic. A remarriage is not an opportunity to hand off discipline, for example, and in fact, that really could backfire, and it's not only not fair to your children, it's not fair to your new partner. So this goes back to that statistic that really shocked me, how half of these parents aren't even reading even one magazine article about what stepfamily life may be like. So get informed first and have realistic expectations. That said, it's perfectly understandable for adults to think about themselves, too. I understand it. I was divorced and remarried, and I, like many adults, felt, you know, I want to have this experience of a happy marriage and a positive experience for me. There's no question about that. But it's not mutually exclusive. It's not that we think about ourselves to the exclusion of our kids. We need to think of ourselves and our kids, and I would say think about your kids first in terms of what they might be thinking, what they might be feeling. And that doesn't mean don't get remarried. It just means be sensitive, be aware, be available, and be supportive.
Do you see many problems with children feeling jealous or envious because now they do have step-siblings that they have to share their parents with? Really? Okay.
Oh, absolutely. And it's so understandable, especially in the remarriage situations, because very often when parents were single, they were spending a lot of time with their kids. And many will say their kids even slept in their room with them or they, you know, went out with them a lot. And then all of a sudden they got into a relationship with an adult and were spending more adult time and less time with the kids. So the kids can feel replaced. They can feel very resentful of their new step-parent. They can feel very threatened by all the step-siblings that are entering their lives. These are normal feelings. And again, parents need to give their kids permission to feel these feelings. We need to say to our kids, I understand that you miss those times that we had together, or I understand that you're worried about this and that. And then parents need to do everything they can, realistically, to meet many of those needs. Now, does that mean not spend time with your partner? Of course not. If anything, it's important to send the message to kids that your mom or your dad is entitled to a healthy adult relationship. And the truth is, kids don't want to be our partners anyway. They really don't. They need to be kids. But this is a process and an awareness that takes time to develop. It's not going to happen overnight.
True.
Makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. That does
definitely
make a lot of sense. Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
I was just going to say, and one of the other conversations, as a matter of fact, over the last couple of weeks, I had a conversation with someone who was talking about their family, mm-hmm. and they had just recently remarried, and they had a teenage son. The teenage son had been basically, as a single parent, had been the man of the family, been the man of the house. And he was approaching that age where he would legally be called a man. And he felt like he was taking care of his mother, and he was really supportive of his mother. And then the mother remarried, and she didn't change how she treated her son, but his perception of his role changed. How do you combat with that? Because she didn't treat him any differently, but his idea of how he was being treated changed within himself.
Sure, sure. And I think the way you address it is by through communication and sensitivity. And really what I want parents to know is just acknowledging feelings can go such a long way. I understand you used to feel like the man of the house, and you're still, you know, such an important man in our family's life, you know, and that kind of thing. Just to acknowledge and support our children's feelings can go such a long way. And sometimes that's not enough, and kids do need more. They need another outlet to let their feelings out, or a person to talk to outside the family. But very often that's an incredibly therapeutic step.
Gotcha.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you, when you have your blended family and everyone mm-hmm. is together, all the different siblings, stepchildren and everything, how do the vacation situations work? I mean, I know a lot of families don't even take vacations, but
sure.
the ones that do, how does that typically work? I mean, should they all go together? Should it, what's your experience?
Amazingly, there are no shoulds in any family, really.
Well, that's right.
So some will take vacations together, and some, you know, with all kinds of iterations. I mean, the truth is, I know some stepfamilies who can even vacation with their exes and their family. So when I say it runs the gamut, it really runs the gamut. I guess the important thing is you want to be careful. You don't want some of your kids to feel excluded or different or left out. And that doesn't mean that every child is included every time, but it needs to be handled sensitively so that mm-hmm. So that kids feel like you're aware of their feelings and their position, and that they don't feel like you're sort of ignoring them.
Absolutely.
Right, right.
Let me talk a little bit about the ex-wives,
yes.
ex-husbands,
yes.
the exes.
Yes. Huge.
Is there any advice or tips or would it help if the new wife was friends with the ex-wife, or does it matter, or...
Well, again, I'm speaking primarily from the perspective of children, because the book I wrote is for, you know, tweens and stepfamilies, you know, tweens and young teens and stepfamilies. But even from the parents' perspective, it just is common sense that the better people get along, the better people feel, and the more harmonious our homes are. That said, you know, I also am realistic, and I know that the reason people get divorced typically in the first place are because they weren't getting along, and because there are very, you know, intense feelings, difficult feelings between each other, and difficult communication between each other, and that doesn't just automatically get better after a divorce. Sometimes it can even get more pronounced because you're dealing with so many new issues like custody and visitation and, you know, all, and now bringing in new people into their lives. However, you know, in an ideal world, the adults will be able to at least be cordial enough that they can go to games together for the children, share holidays and birthday parties and things like that without making children worry about the adults in their lives or feel put in the middle of the adults in their lives or feel that some of the adults in their lives aren't coping. However, there are some situations where that is impossible, and I want to be sensitive to that. I mean, certainly if you've had a history of abuse with someone or, you know, drug addiction or things like that, you may not be celebrating birthdays together and things like that.
Right.
I mean, it's just a very individual situation. But if it's appropriate and realistic and you think you can put aside some, you know, hurt feelings from a past relationship for the benefit of the kids and you think it's appropriate and can do it, then I encourage the adults to work on that in therapy and get to that place if they can, because, again, it's about the children. It's about the children not seeing conflict. Okay, so let's say it's not the best situation. It's not the best case scenario, and the parents, for whatever reason, can't be in the same birthday party at the same time. At the minimum, don't fight in front of the children, and don't put the kids in the middle. That is, I'm a very non-absolutist kind of person. As I just said earlier, there are really no shoulds in stepfamilies. I'm going to put myself out there and say this is a should. You know, don't do it. There's never a reason, never a good reason to fight in front of your children. There's never a healthy reason to put your children in the middle. It's not fair to them. They've been through enough, and it's not appropriate. And so that kind of, oh, your father is this or your mother is that, or tell your mother she's, you know, this, it's just, this is not the path to a healthy stepfamily or healthy relationship. So if you're feeling those negative feelings, tell your best friend, tell your therapist, don't tell it to your children. They are still half of each of their parents, and identify with those parents in some way, and you want to keep that negativity away from them as much as you can. I understand we're still human and we're going to say things from time to time that may slip out, and if we do, we might say, boy, you know, I'm sorry I said that. You know, I need to think about that or something, you know, along those lines to show kids that we're still human. But if you feel like you're going to say something that can be really hurtful and frightening to your kids, please, please, please do your best to bite your tongue and tell it to an adult, not your child.
Now,
right,
what
Debbie,
if there's a... Oh, go ahead, Tony.
Well, I was going to say, Debbie, I'm going to give you a scenario that is actually a situation that did happen,
mm-hmm.
and I want to see if the people handled it correctly.
It depends.
There was a tween who decided that they didn't like their step-parent.
Right.
And so they started to basically lie on the step-parent with the parent and also with the other parent. So, in other words, that parent was doing something that, saying that they did something to me and they did something to my mom and that kind of thing to keep the conflict going, to try to destroy. How do you handle something so volatile like that?
You handle something so volatile like that with counseling. And I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but that's why support is available for exactly this kind of situation. That, first of all, that child may be, there may be some truth, you don't know, so you don't want to automatically assume that when a child says something about a step-parent that they're just shaking things up or stirring up trouble. There may actually be some validity, so you certainly don't want to dismiss it and say, oh, you just don't want mom to be happy, you don't want me to be happy, or, you know, something like that. You do need to listen and hear what they're saying, but you also need to say, well, this is important enough of a concern that we need to get help about it, and we need to go talk to somebody. This is not something you just want to, you know, play detective, or you certainly don't want to dismiss. You need to get somebody outside the family with a little distance who can help and address it. And if there's an ongoing, you know, relationship problem, they can all go in together and see somebody. What's nice about our mental health system right now is that there are all kinds of services available, not only through private offices, but universities, houses of places of worship, what was I going to tell you? Mental health associations in various communities can give you names of people who will see you at a reduced fee or even no fee, you know, in some cases if they're subsidized by various charities. So don't, if you feel like you're having a conflict that's over your head, that you can't handle, or things aren't getting better, don't hesitate to pick up the phone. Your family doctor may be a good resource to, you know, connect you with someone, or like I said, your clergy. But keep looking till you find someone, because if there's a situation that's that out of control or that challenging, it's not just going to go away on its own, and you want to address it sooner than later.
And I'll let you know that they actually went to the church first and spoke to their minister, who then in turn got them into a counselor, and they're doing very well. And it turned out that the child had issues about being abandoned because of the situation and felt abandoned, and now they're doing very well.
How wonderful. How wonderful.
Now let me ask a quick question here, because I'm really curious about this. Sometimes, especially if the child is young and, you know, they're not a tween or a teen, what is your thoughts about adopting the child? Because I know a lot, oftentimes when a couple marries and the young lady already has a child, a son or a daughter,
right,
and then the couple has children of their own,
sure,
and that child may have the name of the previous parent, his biological parent.
Mm-hmm.
How much of an impact does it have on the child if you do or don't adopt them into the family?
Well, the thing about adoption is you have to have the permission of the other parent if the parent's still alive. Or if the parent's deceased, that's a different story. But in other words, very often somebody may want to adopt their partner's child, but the other parent may say, well, no, I'm not relinquishing, you know, my role. So that's one issue. I think if a parent is able to adopt, if the situation lends itself, you know, certainly the message is very positive. It's saying, I want to take responsibility for you. I want to be here to raise you. I want to take along all the responsibilities that go with raising a child. And that's a wonderful message to send to a child.
Absolutely.
That said, even if you don't or aren't in the position to legally adopt the child, you can still send that message. You know, I'm here for the long term. I'm here to add to your life, not take away from your life. And, you know, I want to be a positive adult in your life. And if you can send that message, whether there's a piece of paper or not, it's a wonderful message for a child to be able to hear.
And what about on the other side of the coin? What about if the child is not adopted? Would that have a negative impact on their...
Again, not necessarily, because to me, actions speak the loudest. And so if you have a parent who isn't in a position to adopt you, maybe for financial reasons or otherwise, but who's there, who's committed, who's in it for the long term, ultimately that's what a child's going to remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very personal thing. I mean, I'd have to sort of hear more about the particular details, but in general, you know, adoption isn't always an option, particularly when there's another parent still in the picture, of course. So the big question is, how committed will the step-parent be? To be available, to be a positive influence in the child's life. And that, you know, that I guess speaks to some of the potential positives of step-family life. The more caring adults you have in your life, the better.
That's true. Go ahead. Just hold your question. I'm going to go to the phone here and make sure I've got a caller here. Area code 718, you're on the line. Do you have a question, or are you just listening?
Both. I'm listening because I can't get into the chat room. But the other thing is, I listened to her when she talked about if the child is lying and going into therapy. I tried that, and that created more havoc. It wasn't just the child. It was the other family, too.
Mm.
And it was like, oh, now she think we crazy and blah, blah. And it was just so horrible that, you know, I went into therapy, and it helped me maintain my sanity while I was going through it. But
right.
The question I'm asking now is, because the family is, there's this jealousy, not to her mom is dead and everything, but there's the mother-in-law that never let go of the son, and just it's just crazy stuff. And I just don't bother with them now. I you know, I kind of leave them in the world. And I've been told you need to go there and you need to just hug her and you need to this and you need to that. And I've tried all of that, and now it's like I don't care. So I just like leave her in her world. We live in different cities. You know, I mean, New York and Pennsylvania is not that far, but I just don't bother with them. And I'm just curious if that's the best way to do it. They don't call my home. They'll call on the cell phone to him. Yeah. And I just kind of leave it like that. Is that not
you're talking about bonding kinds of things? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, well, with all of because, like, the stepchild, I feel like since they didn't like me, the child used to like me, and somehow when we got married, everything changed. It became more competitive, and they lied, and just all kinds of little ugly stuff. And every suggestion I had, like I joined the Step Families Association.
Good
I read all the
you.
Books that I could on it. You know, and
good
then, you know, I knew the role that the the biological parent should be the one that does the disciplining. And he had inept skills in discipline because he didn't get her till she was like 13. And, you know, he was so busy being friends with her and buying things that it was just crazy.
That's tough.
And,
how old are your stepchildren now?
She's about 24 now.
Okay. You know? And so you're saying you have limited, no contact, really?
Well, basically, you know, if I happen to have the cell phone and answer, we'll chit-chat and talk.
Right. I mean, step-family bonding is a huge issue.
Yeah.
First of all, it sounds like you've done, you know, so many things to benefit your step-family, and I know it's so frustrating if things still don't quite work out the way you want, and it's important to really pat yourself on the back for recognizing that even if that therapy situation didn't work out, you went on your own, you didn't give up, and that's so important for you. And what I will say, because you brought up an important point, is if people do go to a therapist and for some reason it doesn't seem to be working out, you know, if you feel comfortable, talk to your therapist about it and say, boy, this isn't seeming to get where we want to go or something. But if you really feel like it's not a good fit, find another one. There's no rule that the first person you see is the one that's going to be the best fit for your family. So I do encourage parents, if they feel like somehow there's not a good fit, give it maybe a little time if you choose, or if not, go and find somebody else. That said, the step-parent bonding issue is a critical one at every age, and I think you highlight that, saying you've got a 24-year-old and you're still struggling with this. So you can imagine, you know, parents who are trying to bond with a 7-year-old saying, is it still going to be like this, you know, this many years later? The answer is it depends. There's no easy way that's going to work for everyone. There's no sort of one-size-fits-all way to bond with your stepchildren. It can be a very slow process, and I think realistic expectations are critical because you don't have the history with the kids that their biological parents do. They may be jealous. They may be, you know, dealing with all kinds of conflicting loyalty and saying to themselves, well, if I warm up to my stepmom, is that dishonoring my mom? Is that sending a message that I'm favoring one or the other? There's all kinds of strong things going on. So really, it takes an enormous amount of inner strength to be a step-parent. It really does. And, I mean, even in our own family, you know, my husband will bend over backwards and do everything to, you know, connect with the kids and all that. But at the end of the day, you know, when their biological dad calls on the phone and they greet him differently, you know, or they have that different kind of relationship, it's just the reality that it is a different relationship, and that it's not to say that you can't have a close relationship, but it may take time, and relationships do change over time, and there's no one way. I think it's important not to push yourself on stepchildren before they're ready. Like, you can't sort of say every night, let's do something, you know, let's play basketball, let's go out to dinner, you know, if they're not ready. But in your situation, it sounds like there's a whole lot of kind of tough stuff that you've been through in the past. You know, if you feel like you can talk to your partner and share your feelings and say, boy, I'd really love to develop a relationship with her, you know, your daughter now, do you think you can pave the way? Is there anything we can do together? You know her best and you know your history best. It might be something as simple as sending her a birthday card every year at first, or, you know, just when she calls and you answer the cell phone, say, oh, it's good to hear your voice, and sort of gradually build. If you can start from today, that might be the way to do it, rather than, you know, talking about things that have already happened. Kind of start from today and say, you know, I'd really love to be in your life if you're comfortable with that, but I don't want to push, you know, and see where that goes. But it's very delicate. It doesn't always work. It's not always a successful experience, but I guess it's important for you to know that it's also typically not personal. These are kids who've been through a lot, you know, who've experienced a lot of strong emotions, and it just may not be easy for them to navigate all these new relationships.
All right. Now, Debbie, I want to throw this. You said something. Here's another delicate situation.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a step-parent who's very close with their side of the family.
Right.
And now you've got the family gatherings and family reunions and and get-togethers.
Yeah.
How should that be handled? Because for a child, that's a whole different dynamic.
Yes, it is. You're talking about sort of step, you know, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, all that.
Exactly.
Stuff. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. It goes back to the need for sensitivity and maturity on the part of the adults. again, it's about not pushing before kids are ready. I think if somehow this new relatives can send the message that we're here to add to your life, not take away, and, you know, that's going to be a very reassuring message to kids. If step-grandparents can be sensitive enough not to try to compete with other grandparents or other family members, that's going to go a long way. I think it really comes down to not pushing the kids and to not sending the message that they have to choose, because that's not fair.
I totally agree.
That wouldn't be fair.
Now, we're coming down to our last few minutes, but I do want to just get a couple more questions in. I know this is something that I have actually known several people to do, a situation where one of the spouses doesn't agree on the discipline style.
Right.
And I'm sure it probably goes right along with everything else you've already said. But, you know, one of the, say the wife may not agree of how the
right.
the new husband is disciplining his child. I mean, he brought the child into the relationship. So
yes.
The child is the biological child of the husband.
Sure.
And the new wife is the stepmother, and she doesn't agree. She doesn't think he's hard enough on the child.
Right.
How can those adults work out those differences? Because
they
need to work that out. And I know
you've
touched on all those points throughout the entire conversation, but maybe for some of the people that just came into the chat room a little later, maybe just kind of, you know, briefly go over that, because we're running up on, like, our four-minute mark. So.
You bet. Okay, what I will say, first of all, is that there are many situations of couples who've been married from the beginning who are not step parents who don't agree on discipline. So again, this isn't something that step families have a lock on, but it's certainly more pronounced in step families, that is true. But the resolution of this issue really is the same, and that's all about communication, but it's also about taking a step back and saying, privately, by the way, not in front of the kids. You don't want to start addressing discipline differences while your child is standing in front of you, because that can be incredibly scary to a child. But in private, to say, you know what, I noticed that you let your son, you know, he doesn't have a bedtime, and you let him stay up late and kind of eat, you know, sugar pops for, you know, dinner, and I'm worried about that because I think it makes him tired, or I think, you know, he might feel more secure if he has a regular bedtime. Is that something you'd be open to, rather than saying you're too easy on him? You know what I mean? So
yes.
In the context of communicating, share why you have the observations, not just the observations, and that maybe if your partner hears where you're coming from, that it's about your love and concern for his child, he may be more open to hearing you. Than just saying, boy, you're easy on that kid, you know, and then he can be very defensive and not really be open to listening. If you do have an open window with something like this where he said, yeah, I guess, you know, I hear what you're saying, but he's always stayed up late, you know, that's just what we do, you could say, well, that may be, but I'm here to help, and if you want some suggestions, I'm happy to give it, or if you want to go to a parenting class with me, I'd love to do that. And again, I'll go back to many colleges and churches and community centers offer parenting classes that are very inexpensive, and it can be a wonderful way for step-parents and non-step-parents alike to sort of brush up on skills and get on the same page a little more, and that can be a nice sort of opening. But to do it in a non-threatening way or a non-accusing way can really make the communication a lot more successful.
Absolutely. Great. And we're coming down on our last couple of minutes, so I just want to take this opportunity to remind everyone, some of the people came into the chat room a little later and the callers dialed in a little later, but I want to remind you guys of our upcoming show next week. You don't want to miss this. Howard Hewitt will be here on our show, and he will take all your calls. He'll take all your comments, all your questions. If you'd like for him to sing, he's going to sing. And we are going to have a wonderful, wonderful time next week. So we're coming down on our last few seconds. I am going to thank my guest, Dr. Debbie Glazer, for joining us this evening. She has been a wealth of knowledge on this topic, and we truly appreciate you, Dr.
Thank
Debbie.
You. Thank you. It was nice talking to both of you and to your caller. And if any of your parents would like more information and ways to help and support their child, the Step Tween Survival Guide is available, and it does give kids some tools to communicate, express their feelings, and let their folks know, you know, how they can help.
Absolutely. And you can
go to my website, and I have information for Debbie's website at www.chollowayhill.com. So we're going to sign off for now. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we will see you this time, same time next week here on Living by Design. Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Good night.